I would like to introduce the Datenkrake, which is basically a framework for utilizing programmable logic for hardware security analysis. So first, I would like to talk about our motivation to build these tools and all the software and hardware, talk about existing solutions that can also be used to perform hardware security and embedded device security analysis. And then I would like to introduce you to our hardware and the software that comes with the hardware. Also, I would like to talk about practical examples and use cases that are detailed in our paper. So the motivation was, in contrast to software security, where we have like well-known de facto standards like IDAPRO, for example, to reverse engineer software or different debuggers, they all provide APIs that allows you as a security researcher to build your own plugins to extend the core functionality of your tools. That is not the case for hardware security analysis. You always need to gather a lot of different tools and hardware and software to perform embedded device security analysis. So in the hardware security industry, time is critical. So when customers come with target embedded devices for analysis, they only have a small budget, and you need to try to save time and therefore money. So we need a framework for rapid implementation of tests and attacks against embedded devices. So as I told you before, existing solutions for hardware analysis are proprietary and not extensible. Well, there are microcontroller-based general-purpose platforms, and I will mention them later, but in practice, it's not possible to spend much time in developing own hardware and software tools for hardware security analysis. So what are the requirements for example, targeting high-speed protocols on buses? So when we try to sniff data that is transmitted over buses, we need to decode all the data and the protocols in real time. We need to filter the data before sending it to the PC, for example, because the link to the PC is always pretty slow. So we, in general, we need direct access to the test equipment hardware, which is not that easy for like the standard oscilloscopes or logic analyzers, for example. They are closed and you don't have access to the test equipment hardware. So there are a lot of existing solutions that can be used to hack embedded devices or hardware. So we can use these oscilloscope and logic analyzers, of course, in the first step. There are a lot of microcontroller-based general-purpose devices and, of course, FPGA developer boards that can be used to add programmable logic to your tool chain. But it is a lot of work to do when implementing your own FPGA modules on developer boards, also when interfacing them to the computer. So these are, we call it read-only devices. You can, these are oscilloscopes and logic analyzers. So on the left, we have a very expensive one. They are fast, it's a good hardware, but they are still limited when it comes to proprietary protocols, because you cannot add your own protocol definition to the device to analyze it better. So also, they only allow a passive analysis of whatever you're going to sniff. These are microcontroller-based solutions that can be used. Most of them are well-known. We have the Arduino, which is used for prototyping embedded devices and also security tests, for example. The GoodFit by Travis Goodspeed is more with a focus on hacking, such as the Datenkrake, or DDK for short. And the Bus Pirate, it's also more like targeting the hackers. So all of these solutions have one in common. They're only based on microcontrollers, and therefore they are pretty slow. So now we come to programmable logic. Programmable logic is useful when you need to execute several tasks at once, at one clock cycle, like parsing protocols, shifting data, and so on. So these are some pretty common FPGA developer boards. Most of them are very really over-engineered, such as the one above. There are a lot of components on the board that are still that are really not necessary for doing hardware hacking, and they're all not interfacing to microcontrollers. So if you implement your own module for attacking hardware, you need to transfer the data, the result data, to the computer, and you need to implement this transfer module by your own also. So they are fast, they are reprogrammable, that's good, but they are not the best solution for rapid development of attacks. So that's why we built the DDK. The DDK architecture is basically we put everything together that we need from the previously shown solutions. So for example, we use a microcontroller. In this case, it's an ARM Cortex M3 running with 100 megahertz, and it's directly interfacing a low-cost FPGA using a 16-bit bus for command and data transfer. We also have several GPIO wires between both chips to exchange data and signals. For example, there are UARTs, so we can transmit data from the FPGA to the ARM at high speeds. The good thing with the DDK is that it is completely open source hardware and software. It has, in contrast to the developer boards that I've shown you before, very user-friendly interfaces like RJ45 connectors and not these high-density weird connectors on which you can find on very expensive FPGA developer boards. We have a lot of test pads and breakouts of all the GPIO that is interesting from the hacker's perspective. All the GPIO is terminated, and you can also use it unterminated. So this is also something the FPGA developer boards doesn't have. So all the IO is not terminated. One of the most important aspects was that you are able to update the bitstream on the configuration of the FPGA and the firmware of the ARM processor via USB. So it's not necessary to buy programming adapters for both controllers. So this is how the DDK looks like. For example, on the picture on the right, we see an Ethernet cable that is directly attached to one of the channels of the DDK. So this is what I mean with the interface is pretty standardized and easy to use. So everybody has a Ethernet cable at home and can just cut it into halves and attach one side of the Ethernet cable to the target embedded device and the other side directly to the RJ45 connect jack on the DDK. So this is what the DDK consists of. We have the ARM processor, which is directly below the FPGA, and the interface to the computer is done via USB. So in this case, we use a standard FTDI chip because we don't want to implement the USB protocol on the ARM, because when doing real-time processing of data, we don't want to be interrupted by the USB bus. So these are what we call the channels. So each channel is a RJ45 connector. It looks like an Ethernet hub, but it isn't, and you shouldn't attach it to your Ethernet. We still don't have the FAQ, but this is topic number one. However, each channel consists of six GPIO wires that are the IO wires are buffered and terminated and are connected to the FPGA. And then we have one 5-volt power supply on each channel and ground, of course, so that you can easily extend this hardware with your own application-specific hardware extensions. Like if you're going to build a glitcher, and I will show you a picture or a schematic later, you also need voltage regulators on your extension, and you can easily just connect them to the 5-volt voltage supply and use the GPIO to talk to the FPGA. So these are the buffers. So the buffers are right between the FPGA and your target. They basically protect the FPGA from mistakes. So in general, you don't like to connect your FPGA I/O lines directly to some targets. So you would like to have a buffer to protect it and to be 5-volt compatible. So if you connect the FPGA to a 5-volt bus, for example, it will most likely destroy your FPGA. This will not happen here. These buffers are bidirectional and auto-sensing, so you don't need to care about the configuration of the buffer. The buffers can be enabled and disabled by the ARM directly. And yeah, these are the test pads, what I told you before. From our hacker perspective, these are the most useful test pads. So we have ground pads on each corner, so you can put your crocodile clamp to each corner when doing some measurements with the oscilloscope, for example. And you can just check if every voltage is working correct. So we have the FPGA has two different voltages, like 1.5 volt for the FPGA core and 3.3 volt for the FPGA I/O. And you can disable, so turn off the power to the FPGA from the ARM. So you can basically power cycle the FPGA with the ARM and do this via a command line interface. So you can have a command line interface to the ARM and just configure everything on the board. So this is one very important aspect. We have all the headers here are the breakouts of all the GPIOs. So you can also override the termination of each GPIO. And you can maybe also just attach the DDK to some breadboard, or you can just add some pull-up resistors, whatever you want. However, the software that is running on the ARM provides a first API for programming, and we focused on well-documented frameworks for all the low and high-level access to the periphery on the ARM. So whenever something was missing, like DDK-specific peripheral, we implemented the necessary low-level functions, and you can easily use it with your own tests against whatever. You should. I would like to refer to the paper for details regarding this stuff. The DDK logic, everything that is running on the FPGA is all the basic modules and the frameworks are written in Verilog. Internally, we implemented the Wishbone bus protocol to connect all the different modules and the core module of the DDK logic. Therefore, it is particularly easy to integrate. Existing logic implementations that you have written before or just copied them from OpenCores, for example, because everything on OpenCore must be Wishbone bus compatible, and we are actually Wishbone bus compatible. This is an example on how, for example, an FPGA UARTX module can be connected to the core module using the Wishbone, so everything here. So whenever you program your own Verilog module, you should also use the Wishbone bus to be compatible to everything else. So now let's talk about some practical aspects of why we actually need programmable logic for hardware security analysis. One example is we would like to capture data like whatever an oscilloscope or a logic analyzer does, but also for proprietary protocols at high speeds and in real time. So using logic analyzers is not real time because all the processing of the data happens on the PC, so it's not real time. So we can also use the programmable logic because everything happens in parallel, so it is easy to implement man-in-the-bus attacks. So we can tamper with data and protocols to manipulate the state machines of target embedded devices, for example, and we can try to trigger race conditions, and we can also try to fuzz the target devices to act like a proxy on certain buses. And the buses can be proprietary or, well-known buses, whatever you like. Another aspect is software-defined radio. So a typical software-defined radio, it's just like sampling and processing serialized data. In this case, a typical software-defined radio consists of a radio module that converts an analog signal to a digital one and feeds it into an FPGA. And the FPGA processes all the data, shift the data into a register, matches some pattern, and signals some action to the management software, which is actually running on the ARM. In this case, we don't want to compete with all these different software-defined radio attack tools that are out there. In this case, we would just like to show that it is easy to implement to do rapid development of software-defined radio proof of concept. So we can just implement the proof of concept quite fast, and we can also do software-defined radio in parallel. So, for example, at the Datenkrake, we can just attach 8 different radio modules, and we can process all the different configurations simultaneously. So the FPGA shifts all the data, matches some pattern, and filter out some data, because only a small part of the data is of interest. We also need to decode all the protocols, and that's where microcontrollers will fail, because the protocol decoding must keep up with the rate of the target. And this is something that I already presented with a Kikiriki project. So I started analyzing wireless keyboards, which are running at 2.4 gigahertz using the Nordic semiconductor radio transceivers. They transmit data at 2 megabit per second. And using a standard microcontroller running at 100 megahertz, it is possible to capture the data to implement a software-defined radio, but only small portions of the protocol. So actually, the speed cannot keep up with the data rate. So the result is, due to the limitations, because all the code is not executed in parallel, I had like 30 clock cycles to process all the data and push the data to the computer, for example, for further processing. I had a lot of false positives. Using an FPGA for doing the software-defined radio protocol decoding, it's easier, because this is, for example, the enhanced shock burst protocol that I was talking about before. So we have a preamble, which is basically 1 byte. It's AA or 55. Then we have a 3 to 5 byte long address, which I can call the MAC address. And then we have a control header, which is 9 bit long, and the payload and a CRC. And using an FPGA, we can do everything simultaneously. We can shift the sampled bit into a large register. We can match the preamble. We can match other known values, because we don't know the address yet. So the address is actually something I would like to gather from the air. So Nordic Semiconductor implements it like the sender and the receiver must use the same MAC address, otherwise everything is considered noise, so they basically extend the preamble by the MAC address. So using an FPGA, this is quite easy to achieve, and this is how we attach, for example, the Amicom A7125 radio transceiver to the DDK port or the channel X. So we need an SPI bus to configure the radio module, and we need the I/O line to actually shift the serialized data from the radio module to the FPGA. Another aspect where speed and accuracy is really important is hardware glitching. So when introducing transient non-invasive faults to the microcontroller, we are attacking a single clock cycle. Attacking a single clock cycle is just to cause incorrect values being loaded into registers. And for example, just to jump out of loops or cause some undefined behavior. And as you might think, it requires a very precise timing and fractions of the clock cycles of the target controller. So this is the so-called clock glitching. There's also voltage supply glitching, which I will show you later. So the goal is to alter the clock period during the execution to produce incorrect intermediate values and what I told you before, to just push the device into an undefined state. When performing voltage glitching, we try to drop the voltage below a certain level to corrupt the read or write access to some memories, which is useful when we try to prevent the microcontroller to write, for example, status bits to an EEPROM, for example. And yeah, using the DDK, it is quite easy to achieve because the DDK includes several PLLs, we have frequency dividers and multiple global clock signals, and yeah, we can generate different clock frequencies, for example, whatever we need, like 10 nanoseconds or 20 nanoseconds. This is how a hardware voltage glitching module for smart cards could look like. So in this case, we connect two voltage regulators to the 5-volt power supply, and we can control these voltage regulators to drop the voltage at a specific time. Maybe we can just lower the voltage of the VCC, or we can raise the voltage of the ground to attack smart cards in this case. So the future work is, yeah, we already learned a lot about what we made wrong. So in future, we try to optimize the performance instead of the costs. We use a low-cost FPGA, which is sufficient for most applications. But the main disadvantage is, for example, the limited write endurance of the flash RAM array, which is part of the FPGA. In future, we will utilize an SRAM-based FPGA with unlimited write endurance. So we would like to also to add a mass storage device such as a SD card to the device to be able to store bit streams for the FPGAs and configurations, as well as being able to store result data directly to the SD card. Actually, you can implement it in HDL right now and attach it to the RJ45 jack, but we will implement it in hardware later. So, however, the DDK is a very low-cost solution, and it is in contrast to all the commercial and different solutions that I introduced you before, it is quite flexible and extendable. We use standard connectors, which is a main benefit because it makes it easy to interface to different targets, and we can utilize programmable logic to perform very time-critical actions on the bus or on target embedded devices. We published all the software and the hardware under the BioWare license, which makes it also pretty easy to extend the platform because it's not that restrictive as, for example, GPL. And that's basically it. Thanks. And are there any questions?
Which board?
I've never looked at it so far, but yeah. I mean, there are quite a couple of solutions that utilizes a microcontroller and an FPGA, and I think it's basically what you refer to. But actually, our focus was more on rapid prototyping and rapid development of proof of concepts against target devices, so, yeah.
I think with Daisho board, there's like HDMI.
Yeah.
And you're actually as opposed to just like the 6.
I've never looked at this board, but yeah. Everything is released. So we have everything on GitHub. It's on github.com/DDK. You will find everything. So the Verilog modules, the firmware for the ARM, and the hardware schematics and layouts.
More questions? Well, thanks a lot, Torsten. It's really great work. I really like the presentation. Thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you.
See you.